Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm Paul John Roach, coming to you from a still hot day in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm here at Unity Fort Worth. In a couple of days, it's dropping down to the 70s. It's going to be so nice. Today, I welcome artist, author, and innovator in digital media, IJ Jared Rosen, to the show. He was born in Brooklyn in 1956, and Jared has had a fascinating life that has taken him from the galleries and underground clubs of New York City to Peru and shamanic initiations to Marin County, Santa Fe, and a career helping others therapeutically and spiritually. And much of it is laid out in his new book called Drowning in the Light, Memories of the New Age. I think there's a little play on words there in that title. And so it's a pleasure to welcome Jared to today's show. I'm glad you're with us.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Interesting book, you know, because I see so many parallels with my own life. You know, you at one point you're involved with Rudrananda and Muktananda people, and another point you're in Marin County and Mendocino, and I've spent time in those places as well, and then some other resonances. So it's interesting. I guess if you're in the this kind of New Agey, New Thought movement, you tend to bump into the same influences as you go along. But you've always been a little bit out of the box, wouldn't you say, Jared? Talk about the green boy, will you?
Oh, boy, what a question. Well, out of the box is a really interesting concept. I when I first heard that, thinking outside of the box, the first reaction I had was thinking from the source of the box, where does the box even come from? So it's interesting I start my book really in this sort of state of rumination of being a baby in a crib, and from that point on, you know, learning about electricity by sticking a pin in a socket, and then having this sort of imaginary friend that was like sort of like an elf that had green skin, and my journey into suburbia when we moved out there, and I was, you know, in the 60s, and so yeah, the book sort of characterizes that the round peg and being born into this square hole, and so you know, the revelations looking back at how I would look at things, like I would look at walls and say, are they really solid? I'd look at the cinder block and like, is it like a foam? You know, and well, maybe everything is like a quantum jello mold and we're all like pieces of fruit and we're all connected. So I was sort of like imagining the unified field as I was sitting there bored to death in the little wooden desk, you know, in third grade. So I think, my mind did actually open up. So when people started talking about other dimensions and all these things that came out, you know, later on when the so-called New Age movement just blasted into pop culture, you know, I had a whole history of, now we can talk about these things, huh?
Right, exactly. So one of the first impressions you had, or one of the first awakenings, you know, before you knew it was an awakening, perhaps, you know, wasn't cognizant in that way, was of light, wasn't it? That there was that, and that's a sort of a leitmotif that goes through the whole book, if you like, is this this images of light. So why drowning in the light? I was talking to my wife this morning. I was reading the last part of the book, and I said, I got this interesting fellow on the show today, and this book's called Drowning in the Light. And she says, wow, that's a kind of intimidating, overwhelming title. So tell us about that.
Well, you know what? If you want to get somebody to pick up a book, you should certainly put a provocative title. And I think really the genesis of Drowning in the Light, and you mentioned some of the places I live, well, after, you know, to my early days in New York as an artist, I feel a little like Zelig. I was there with Warhol in the factory. I mean, I was a young kid. I saw these things happen and was a part of the whole art world. And then I saw that it was sort of the deconstruction of my whole reality. And that's when I went off, and it was early in the 80s, into Peru and the shamanic initiation. All these things that I did searching for myself was, you know, they were not easy. And I went deeper into, you know, the whole shadow world to discover the light. And so when I was in Santa Fe in 1987, that was really like, I think, the genesis of the New Age movement with the harmonic convergence, and it was a cover of Time magazine, and Shirley MacLaine was on the cover. Of course, she was living in Santa Fe at the time, as well as Malibu, and she had a book out called Dancing in the Light. And so I had to look at this all from the artist's lens, and that's why it was a little tongue-in-cheek with Drowning in a Light. But many years later, which was actually about a year ago, after almost dying from a medical situation, I thought I had to write this book because I absorbed so much wisdom on this journey, but I didn't want to write a book called The Physics of the Dream Time that was, you know, you had to have a thesaurus to read it. So, but I wanted to share my story. So it's a weaving of my stories and the wisdom. But I guess to answer your question, why drowning is, that's really the feeling that I've had. It's a good feeling sometimes because it's in drowning you have to surrender. I mean, no one wants to physically drown in water. But if you think about it, you know, you just let go and you become part of that, part of the ocean, back to the ocean. So to me, it's really that intensity. I think that's exactly, you know, what you heard this morning. The reaction was a reaction, I think, that's positive, because I think we do have to shock. Another, you know, metaphor I use is spiritual electricity, and we kind of need to sometimes have that voltage. I think that's why we gather together and, you know, and pray and chant and meditate and do these things, is to feel that current that is, you know, spirit.
Absolutely, and you mentioned in the book, you know, that we do all kinds of things to shock ourselves into that, you know, whether it be you know, outrageous art, or whether it be drugs. And you talk a little bit about your experiences with the drugs in Peru, and also, you know, ecstasy when it first came out, and yet, you know, there's a sense, isn't there, that we don't need these things if we're totally turned on. I think there was a wedding you were at, and the minister said, you know, just breathing. I don't need to take ecstasy or whatever, or Molly, or just breathing is my ecstasy. You know, and I think that's a wonderful place to get to, isn't it? Where we don't need sort of an aid, if you like. We are so open and receptive to life. Unfortunately, I think many of us are sort of dumbed down or closed off, or within that, you know, metaphorical box, and we're desperate to escape in a way, and so we go to these extreme things. But ultimately, once you sensitize yourself, I think everything becomes an opening, doesn't it? Everything's a miracle.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, why I shared about these experiences I had was kind of like you said in the beginning, you know, it feels like your story. It's so many people. I've been on a lot of radio shows, and this is same reaction. I feel like this is my story. I went to Peru and did that, or thank God I didn't have to do the things that you did. But I think that it's all that search, and I think that's what the book, you know, when people get to the end of it, you know, it's like the search is just sort of is over, but I take people through that journey I went through and the things that I did, not necessarily that they should go and do the same things, but it did characterize that time, and specifically that time still exists for a lot of people where they do feel like they want to change the channel. And and so, you know, these plants that are used with the shamanic initiations, and they're very, very powerful plants, and in the wrong hands, and, you know, going out to a party, or, you know, all these other things. So, you know, that's not what they were put on this planet for. I'm not condoning that in the book, but I think that a lot of people do actually respond to it because there's humor to it, and as far as the breath goes, actually what happened during that period of time was I had developed a system of energy healing, perhaps, and I taught people from all over the world, that is about the breath. And the simplicity of it is to actually have no resistance. And that was the research I was doing. I was looking at energy and how it flows. And I looked at superconductivity, and I said, well, in superconductivity, there's no resistance, so there's no stress or breakdown. Electrons flow smoothly. I'm like, well, what if our energy, how do we conduct energy or electricity? Through breathing. When we breathe, we bring electricity into the cells of the body. So I investigated these really fully, but it wasn't just like the research, it was more like the experience. And when people were breathing in such a way where they didn't feel the resistance anymore, when they felt this total surrender, healing takes place. And I think that that's the energy that we all want to be around, because I think that's the energy of, we can call it God or spirit, is that feeling of wholeness and unity, exactly like, you know, the perfect name of this radio channel.
Exactly, it is that.
Yeah, and that's fusion, and unity is just like what happens in at the moment of conception or the birth of a star. It's that fusion, and that's that feeling of connection and oneness, and we all want that. And I think without that, there's suffering.
Well, I was going to say, and I think unfortunately we see. And the human being sees its meaning in suffering, you know, in struggle, right? There's always that pushing. And even, like you said earlier, the idea of the box, you know, in reality there is no box. But we self-create the box, and then we have this yearning and struggle to get out of it, you know. But once we have an awakening, we realize, my goodness, you know, I self-created my limitations, and I don't have to live that way. You know, I got a strong feeling in the book that you were running around physically and metaphorically in circles there in New York, you know, going from one club or gallery to the other, succession of jobs and et cetera. And eventually it got really deadening. That's the feel I got. And you were ready to move forward. You know, you wanted to shift your life. And that's when things began to change dramatically. I'm not saying you didn't have value and you did wonderful things in New York. I'm sure you did. But I did sense there was that, you know, idea that I got to get beyond this, yeah?
Yeah, what a beautiful characterization, because really the way I see it, I was in an art world at that time, and I had a dream of it as a young child to be part of a movement, and, you know, it was very much the romanticism of it,
studying
our history and seeing movements. And so being a part of that, actually, and, you know, being a, in it, and, but what I saw was, somehow the art and everything I was doing was a deconstruction of who I was. It was like really a place of ego death. And then when I withdrew myself from that world and started, because I got sick, I started taking books out, and I took one book out in yoga. This is 1980, before yoga is a multi-billion-dollar industry with five-star, you know, fashion. I started doing yoga, and all of a sudden I had what's the classic Kundalini experience, which basically is like this shot of electricity that completely dissolved the boundaries of who I was. And I came out of that. I mean, literally, I was paralyzed, completely awakened, but also terrified, because I walked out my door into New York City, and it was like, this is all madness. And I felt like this is like, you know, this is a material nightmare. And then I saw the light in it, and I began to teach. I found a teacher, and that's when I got into meditation. And for several years, you know, I lived a very disciplined life, meditating, you know, day and night. You know, and I know that, you know, and from that, that's before I went to Peru. I got bored, and I think my entire search, the circles I went around in New York, was like trying to find out who I was from the ego. Then when I realized that the ego was this kind of, I was chasing my tail, this is all an illusion, then I wanted to find out the truth, and I couldn't stop looking. And I think that's really the nature of the drowning of light, is like, even drowning in books. I would take out books on, you know, on physics and things, like 20 books from the library, to try to figure out, you know, what's underneath matter.
Right. You know, you reference one of my favorite songs, actually, in that early part of the book. You had a moment where you saw John Lennon and Yoko Ono on the street, and you were hoping they were going to come into the gallery where you had some of your art, and they didn't. But that's fine. Life unfolds in other ways. But you talked about his song, Nobody Told Me. And when I was a kid, my mother would always recite this poem. I thought it was by Kipling, but it's not, actually. But it has a line in it. So there's a green-eyed yellow idol to the north of Kathmandu. And in that song, John Lennon references the green idol in Kathmandu. But it's nobody told me there'd be days like these, strange days indeed, you know. And a lovely song, because, you know, things are not what they seem, right? We have to penetrate the veil, if you like, of quote normalcy in order to get into this infinity that's much more profound. And one of the things you that came to you in your meditation or in your Kundalini rising experience was this idea of nothingness. And I think a lot of people are frightened of nothingness. Papaji, the great Indian guru, says nothing ever happened is the ultimate truth. And we want something to happen, don't we? We don't like the idea that there's nothing. And I even remember in seminary, they would say, well, it's not nothing, it's no thing. And I thought, no, that's a cop-out, because it's not no thing, it's nothing. It's beyond what we can even conceptualize about, you know, what might not be. But it's comforting, isn't it? It's not like it's nothing in the sense, it's not full of potentiality. It's a void that's kind of full of things. Can you talk about that more?
Oh, absolutely. Well, the great metaphor to me is the ocean and the wave.
Right.
So every wave is individual, but it's part of the ocean, always falls back into the ocean. So it's like, you know, that we're all waves and we're part. And that was, you know, my early experiences, sitting in the desk and imagining that we were all, you know, pieces of fruit in a jello mold. I mean, I was thinking that everything was connected and everything was separated by frequencies. So, so nothingness. As I went further and deeper, because what I began to do, I discovered in my breath, if I could breathe into the center of my breath, and then I had this literal experience that like the eye of God is inside of everything, and that eye is, it's like the eye of the storm. There is no movement there. It's not electromagnetic light. It's a still light, and there's no thing. Yeah, no thing there, but that field, whatever that is where we're all one. You know, and that is, and so that, you know, to me, God is inside of everything. Creator's inside of all of creation. But nothingness, from stripping everything away, is very scary. It's the void. But, you know, and that it's the darkness. It's the womb in which everything is born from. So sometimes we need to die to that. And every exhale is that. That's why we call it expiration. You know, it's we die into that field, and then we birth back in through the inhale by the inspiration of spirit in. So it's this constant flow. We're just continually, you know, I don't think there was ever a big bang. I think this is a continuous big flow from the source that we can call it nothing, but if everything is nothingness, then it's a grand paradox. Now, all those things sort of fall apart in my book towards the end when I'm diagnosed with a blood disease. And like, you know, and I've just remarried and found the, you know, the woman of my life. And like trying to like, you know, just, okay, I just want a normal life now. Oh, now I have this challenge, you know. I may die, you know. So, you know, I think that nothingness hit me last year when I faced that void. And it is a really scary place. Death always is. But it's, you know, there's no way around it as far as I haven't found it yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right, folks, I'm with I.J. Rosen, Jared Rosen, and we're talking about his book, Drowning in the Light, and all of the many things he's been through, including what he just referenced there, a life-threatening disease. We'll talk more about that when we come back after these messages from Unity. Join us in about 2 minutes.
As Unity Online Radio continues to expand its programming and outreach to the world, we count on the support of listeners like you. Please make your donation today. Go to www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now.
We are all on the journey together, making sense of this life, finding our spirituality, growing and evolving. As we travel through this world, Unity Magazine is your resource for gaining a deeper understanding of life. Unity Magazine is on the forefront of spiritual discovery, with articles and features from leading authors, teachers, and philosophers. Stimulate your thinking and strengthen your spirituality with Unity Magazine. Sample a free trial issue or subscribe today at unitymagazine.org.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. Yes, I'm Paul John Roach, and I'm interviewing I.J. or Jared Rosen about his book, Drowning in the Light, Memories of the New Age. When I was in my early 20s, I left Britain, where I grew up, to go to India and spend about a year there and travel through the Middle East. And I often characterize my life as BI and AI before India and after India. And in your case, Jared, you went to Peru, and that was a kind of a watershed moment, wasn't it? That was a confirmation of many of the things you already knew deep down, but introduced you to a whole new panoply of insight and sometimes quite dramatically.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I didn't go to India and, you know, go to the ashram and meditate. I just wanted to, like, rip the veil off and see what was on the other side. And and that was my trip to Peru, which was a real turning point. And I would say probably the most important aspect of that trip was really to look back and see just how much I needed to see another picture of reality, that the hunger, and I came back and the hunger had turned into a more practical application. But when I was there, I really, you know, I wanted answers, and I thought I would find them there for some reason. But I really basically deconstructed myself further than I even imagined. It was a turning point.
You know, so many teachers, it seems, after we've been there and received, they always say, okay, go back, you know, go back to the West and do something with this understanding that you have. And you received a similar message from your teacher, right, Don Eduardo. And let me read it. It says, he spoke to you in Quechua, but you could understand it in English. That's interesting. And it said, the world as you know it is upside down. You are here to turn it right side up. You're like a sunflower. Go back to your land and spread seeds. That's a lovely, lovely message, isn't it? Go back to your land and spread seeds. As this show goes out, we're just a few weeks before the American presidential election, and the world does seem to be turned upside down in even more dramatic ways than usual. So are you optimistic about this, or are you full of trepidation about this, Jared, where we are right now?
Well, I'll start with the fact that I did publish a book, had a book published of mine called The Flip in 2006. And the whole point of The Flip was that the world is upside down. And, you know, kind of my funny little, you know, we drive on the parkway and park on the driveway.
Right.
You know, but I see that, you know, parking lot attendants making more money than child care attendants. It's upside down. And that's the part that's always troubling to me. And writing The Flip was about how do we, you know, look at it from whole systems instead of separation-based thinking. And I, you know, talk to some of the greatest world leaders. But I'm extremely, I would say optimism and pessimism doesn't really follow my thoughts. I think that we're on a huge evolutionary spiral. And I think that the word apocalypse, I believe it means something like uncovering. And certainly in this presidential race, everything seems to be uncovered. In other words, there is, you know, the skeletons are brightly shining in the closet of our collective psyche, and I see parts of ourselves in all of it. So I think it's a healing in a way, but I think it's also kind of treacherous because when you start deconstructing your cultural identity, you know, like what's going on now, people don't know what really who they are anymore. What does it mean to be American? And I think these things are really digging up deeply in our soul, you know, because, you know, either we're all one, you know, or we're all separate, and there's not anything in between as far as I can see.
Right.
So I think the logic is that we're all one, and if we stick with that and we follow that and say there is no separation, to see what's going on, if there's rioting, and seeing what part of me is there? What part of me wants to control? Wants nobody to tax me because I want as much as I possibly can have. And I think that's that. So I think that really, in a way, this is a big mirror of the shadow. This election is so deep in the shadow that it's scaring people because it doesn't look like normal reality.
And I think
that's
part of
my impression.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that's the nail on the head, and I think Deepak Chopra talks about this too. That, you know, it's some of the collective shadow coming out, and for us to have a look at. I also think that, you know, America is in decline as a nation in terms of its traditional power. You know, and it's still coming to terms with that, and doesn't want to relinquish power. You know, as China and some of the other new economies arise, there's this sense of threat, I think. And so there's always a retrenchment, isn't there, when that happens. And I think that's part of this anger that people are feeling, this frustration. But, you know, I being British, I've seen the same thing happen in Britain, where, you know, we were in decline for many years after the empire. But it's sort of renewed. Britain has renewed itself in some ways, and it's still a great country. You know, it's still one of the great economies of this world, even though it's so small geographically. And I see good things for America in that regard. If we can shift from, you know, some of those old paradigms of having to be top nation and having to be number one in everything. I mean, we're obviously not anymore, right. And yet, you know, that's okay. We have many, many assets here that are wonderful, and we could be a world leader in ways that is more consistent with maturity, you know, rather than the old tribal sense. So, you know, maybe good things will arise. I affirm they will arise from the seeming divisiveness that we're in right now. It's been interesting, by the way, Jared, you know, being a minister during this time and leading the congregation, you know, through this, because as you say, we are one. We believe that in unity. We embody that, live from that. But it's still incredibly divisive, what we're bombarded with every day. So it's a good exercise in remembering who we are. So that, you know, sometimes those moments or those times of pressure and difficulty can actually inspire us, right, to deepen our practice, if you like.
I think it all does. I think that the world, you know, is constantly this interplay of dark and light. You know, it's day, it's night, it's day, it's night. It's constantly, so we're constantly struggling with that polarity but the polarity of the mind can really be detrimental, because it does see things as black and white, and it's very hard sometimes to see that that there is a range. And, you know, I think that one of the things that people are waking up to, I believe, to some degree, is their own sense of personal sovereignty. And I think that the mobile technology, we can call it internet technology, has really given us more of that sovereignty. People think that, you know, it's a noose around your neck, and that, you know, that we're not free anymore because, you know, everyone's watching us and all this. But I think to some degree, that sense of personal sovereignty, and just with knowledge, and you think about it, you know, if you want to know something, you just pull this thing out of your pocket and move your fingers a little, and then you you can have a spectrum of answers. It's not one answer. It's, you know, and so I think people have, I think there's just, you know, I think we're evolving to a much higher place. You know, why I wrote the book at this time was I was really in a place of looking at the fragility of life, because I had come so close to death, and, you know, still have something that every day if I have to be aware of. But I live a wonderful life. So I think that it pushed me, whatever happened in my life, you know, has brought me to this place of compassion. And I think what you're talking about, like, you know, imagining being a minister and seeing, you know, people all emotional about the election, and, you know, to find that place of equanimity, to find that place of everyone's right and everyone's wrong. You know,
right.
And I think that's a really high place to get to, but it's not an easy place to get to, because the world has so much velocity. Things are just moving so fast. And we react, and I think that's the greatest gift, I think, is to be able to just, I think quite, that's why I found what the breath gave me the ability to just instantly find that moment, to like just find that center of the breath and go, I'm just going to rest here and observe. And that's not an easy place to be, especially if you're emotional, and that's what happens, you know, in an accident, and a police officer comes over, the time in which, you know, like, just take a breath, or, you know, a doctor, whoever, because taking that breath it just takes us out of the chaos of our mind and the fear and the shock. And I think people are like in a constant chronic stress reaction when things are not going well in the outside world and there's a lot of fear.
Yeah, and I think that sums it up well, you know, that it is a chronic stressed reaction that we're all in. You see it on the street. We never drove quite as crazy as we are now. It seems like everybody's in a rush to get somewhere, and there's the civility level has diminished, you know, just in general. And that's disheartening sometimes because you think, well, why are we doing this? This is crazy. It's a double whammy, isn't it? It's a paradox. Like you say, the smartphones yield wonders. I mean, I've got a whole library in my pocket kind of thing. If I need to know anything under the sun, I can do it. You know, I can just look at it immediately, whereas before I'd had to spend a day researching it somewhere in the library. So that's wonderful. And the other side of it is we become, you know, passively invested in the machine. So we're our heads are down in it all the time. We're not really paying attention to what's around us. So it comes at a cost. But I think on balance, if you use it wisely, like anything, it can be useful, right?
Well, absolutely. And I think that the balance is really important. And I was just having this conversation with somebody. I follow Social Trends, the book I wrote before this, The Flip, really looked at the trends of a lot of things. You know, it was 2006 that were moving in this direction, you know, more healthy, sustainable lifestyle choices and everything, especially transportation, which, you know, I'm happy to say I drive electric car, and I think that we're moving into an age where these world problems, they don't need to be anymore. We can hopefully move away from controlling the Middle East for whatever we're doing there, for these resources, when, you know, we can actually make the shift to sustainable technologies, and we are. And, you know, it's funny, every time I see a parking structure, I think of what would it be like if that roof was all solar and that every parking spot had a plug, you know? And we'd all be driving and powered by the sun. How hard is that? It's not. It's here. So I would say, you know, in the beginning of the conversation about being pessimistic, optimistic, I'm like overly optimistic because I think that spirit is a spiral, and that we're on this spiritual evolution. Like there's a physical evolution, whatever that means. That, you know, that everything matter is constantly going through evolutionary changes through, you know, entropy and such. But I feel like there's a consciousness evolution. And yeah, I can see it in my own lifetime. And I think that's why there's so much issues coming up now around this, that, you know, we have to change the way. It's very hard to be stuck in our ways when change is happening at such a fast rate.
Right, exactly.
It's almost all right, blinding, you know. But you just, you know, we do our best.
Well, at the same time, you know, things are extremely fast and changing in one sense, and in another sense, not at all. So there's another conundrum, if you like, another paradox, isn't it? We can be fooled and buy into all this speeded up stuff and forget that, you know, that stillness that we talked about earlier in the show is always present, and in fact more valuable now because of all the distractions that we're presented with. You know, at the end of each presidential debate, they always get out the fact checkers, okay? And I've got to fact check something in the book, okay? This is on page 50. Tell me if this is correct, because I was blown away. It says there was a newspaper article you read that KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, had created an astronomical 87,500 square foot image of Colonel Sanders. That's frightening right there. In Nevada's Area 51 desert site, it can be seen from outer space. This is a joke, right?
Well, it's not a joke. You know,
wow.
And I mean, so, okay, so there's a couple of things in the book that are like, is this, you know, is this true? Or I can't use the S word, but I can't make this up. first of all, okay, so there's a story, and the story is how I serendipitously meet Margaret Sanders, who actually inspired the colonel to dad to go, you know, get that chicken out there when he wasn't quite a young guy. And I ended up having dinner. I was a vegan at the time. It's a good story in the book, because she invited me for dinner, and then the doorbell rang, and it was KFC delivery. So I was like, okay, I'll let go of being a vegan for the night. But she had shared with me some pretty far out metaphysical things and some experiences, and one she shared with me around Einstein, and a magnificent woman. And that was a one-time experience. And then I saw this thing, because I had like an experience where I thought I saw Colonel, this is before I even met her, Marcus Sanders, I thought I saw Colonel Sanders on a spaceship. Now, I know this sounds, people say, is this guy insane? But the same thing about the paintings that I did in New York City, where I had spaceships and all this stuff. This was in a gallery in Soho. And when John and Yoko were gallery hopping, they were one door away. They were going to walk in. And at that point, it was like, wow, maybe they understand what, you know, here I was, you know, 20-something years old. And I was like, maybe somebody will understand my crazy world. Like, why? What is this about? And of course, you know, in the story, they move on, they go back in the limo. But years later, I hear that song that nobody told me, where he says, there's a UFO over New York, and I ain't too surprised. Well, a few months ago, I was on a radio, actually a television, internet television show in London. And the person had read this book, and he told this story. He said, you know, I actually had this woman on who was with John at the time, when the UFO appeared on the balcony. Huh. So, you know, it's all a weird dream. And,
exactly.
And when you start seeing the interconnectivity of things, but as far, I would, you know, I, that was something I actually read about, and if anyone's listening and they're online, go check it out and see if you get any more information about that, about the, what would we call it, a crop circle.
Exactly.
Yeah. A branded crop circle.
Yeah, talking about crop circles, I know this not in the book or anything, but, you know, that's fascinating too, isn't it? Because I know some of them, it seems, have been created by people, you know. But some are so sophisticated and beautifully designed, it's hard to imagine they could be done overnight. You know, there's something going on there. And I'm kind of convinced that there's... you know, some intelligence here at work that's working on other levels. You know, talking about use of light. We go to Peru, you see some of the stone edifices there, you know, with no gaps whatsoever. And you say, well, how on earth were they created? But I think there's many ways of doing things, aren't there? And light and energy is part of that.
Oh, I think that there's been advanced civilizations here before in different forms. I think... you know, we've chosen a particular form, you know, but maybe we'll discover that the kind of primitive, especially the way we use electricity. I don't really know if there are ETs from other worlds or any of these things, and I'm less interested in that. But I would really kind of doubt that the human species as we know it is the most intelligent thing in the universe. It would really kind of scare me in a way if that were. We seem to be of an earlier stage of development. Of, you know, kind of moving from more animalistic, you know, because we do things that even most animal kingdoms don't do, like destroying our own environment, killing our own species. So there's something off here in this world that we know, and I wouldn't doubt that there's higher intelligence. And my whole theory about all that and all these things is not maybe that they're from another world, that everything is like a TV set. And they're all happening on different channels, which is different frequencies. And so sometimes one channel, like in the old days, when your antenna was off, you'd get two channels that would overlap, you know. So maybe it's more something like that.
Well, it you know, it boggles my mind sometimes to think. I was in Colorado last week at a conference, and way up in the mountains, and then... you know, my cell phone goes off and somebody's talking with me, you know, thousands of miles away. And I think, you know, how did they find me? And where did that signal come from? And it's in the air all around us at all times. You know, all these multiplicity of frequencies of radios and iPhones and you name it. And yet we don't, we're not aware of them until we tune in, until somebody sends us a message on the frequency that we're connected to. And if that can work, you know, in that mundane way, which is pretty miraculous, I think it can certainly work in super mundane ways, you know, in terms of spiritual possibilities. So there is an infinity of possibility around us, isn't there? My wife actually thinks that eventually we won't need smartphones. You know, we'll be able to do all this telepathically or through consciousness, and that'll solve a lot of problems of artificial intelligence. We just won't need it. We'll be able to tune in at a higher level. That's a lovely idea, isn't it? I don't know if she's right, but I like the idea of it.
Oh, I think she's just tapping into the future evolution, which is, you know, one of the chapters in the book, The Science of Transfiguration, was a period of time that I went very deeply into science to try to understand things, and specifically things that I had started seeing in my own physical experience of matter, of myself. And you know, the deeper I went into that, the more I began to look at what's the next stage of human evolution. And I wouldn't doubt that we would be in a place, you know, where your wife's vision would be pretty much, you know, part of the that next stage of evolution. To some degree, I believe, you know, we're moving into that space of connectivity. And I think energetically, we can already start feeling it when we are connected in groups of people, and that's, I think, what happened in the New Age. I think, you know, when I look back and was writing the book and thought of these great, like, moments in history of the New Age, the harmonic convergence of 1987 and, of course, the 2012 date, and all of the focus on, you know, on one specific consciousness, you know, one unity consciousness, and I wonder if these events that we've done and the things that happen and continue to happen are part of that part of the connectivity of a coming together, and then it's a natural part of us to all of a sudden that we're seeing the one, and soon we'll see the many. It's like the spectrum. The one ray of white light comes through a prism, and it breaks down into seven unique colors. And it's like each one of us, maybe the seven root races, you know, we're like these colors, and we have to experience it fully and completely. But then there's that second prism, you know, and maybe that's what happens on the evolutionary spiral, and that second prism reconstitutes that back to that one light, and we remember that, yes, we're both the one and the many. And I think this is what's going on in America right now, you know, because I think that the color here was supposed to be white, although it was originally red, and now it's not as white, and that scares people. And I think, that tribal consciousness that we see, you know, happening, whether it's in the Middle East with the different tribal societies, and the warring between those societies that are going on, whether it's in Africa or in the Middle Eastern countries. So I think that this is what we're working through until, you know, and maybe the higher consciousness and the higher evolution and these events are driving us. You know, I always thought, even the book really does kind of come to a place that who cares? Does it really matter? Just, you know, it's, I use the metaphor of my life and how this book was sort of the articulation of this metaphor. And the metaphor is, first there is a mountain, then there is a mountain that, I'm sorry, first there is no mountain, then there is, or whatever. It's a song by Donovan.
But right, first there is a
mountain. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there
no
is.
Mountain,
and how
yeah.
It works is, first I was like, this is who I am. You know, this is, I look in the mirror, I say, this is who I am. Then we talked about that nothingness, then there's that place of, who am I really? And that dissolution of self, or identity of self. But then you always come back to, like, well, what's the practicality of living in this, you know, mystical consciousness? It's just kind of like a mind F you, in a way, because what are we doing? How are we making life better for other people? How are we contributing? What is it? How are we, you know, if we're just observing it from this, you know, from this abstract place?
Right, yeah. I think the Donovan borrowed it from an ancient Buddhist text.
It's a Zen
that
koan.
Idea. Right, exactly. And, the idea is, chop wood, carry water again, isn't it? It's, first of all, you see it in a mundane way. You know, they have to chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, or when you're in the middle of it, it seems like there is no mountain. Nothing makes sense. But afterwards, you're coming back to chopping wood and carrying water, except in a different way now, because you're doing it, as you said, with a light touch, with a compassionate heart. So it's the same thing that you're doing, but you're doing it in a wholly transformed way. And I think that's the nature of this. It's I think people are afraid. You use the image of light and color, and I think people are afraid that, you know, when all the colors mix, they're going to turn gray, you know, because we've been taught that's what happens when we did that as a kid. We mixed up all the colors, and they turned into a nasty gray. But I think the beauty of this is that the colors don't change, do they? The there can be the white light, but when it's in the spectrum, it's infinitely beautiful. It doesn't become gray. And I think we have to encourage folks to understand that. Justin Trudeau said that the other day at the United Nations. He said, we are successful in Canada, not in spite of our diversity, but because of it. And it's made our country better because we have so many different kinds of people and so many races and creeds, etc. And I thought, wow, that is an awesome statement, and it's a courageous statement in our world today. I think I'm appreciative of him actually as Canada's Prime Minister.
Well, I think going back to that metaphor of the many colors. If you don't really know your color, then you project it on everything, and everyone's against you. And so, I'm not talking about the color of your skin, your own unique vibration, who
right,
you are.
Right, exactly.
And
exactly.
And that's what the search has been for so many people. So I think there is no mountain, I don't exist. It's all a dream. And then, but what do you do? It's a dream, but it's very, very real because, your kids got to get to school and you got to, pay the rent and whatever it is. And so... but yes, you, that awareness, it's I wrote Drowning in the Light with this in mind. Maybe you don't have to go to Peru and drink black tobacco juice, pisco alcohol, San Pedro cactus, hallucinogenic cactus, and taboo perfume in a mixture in a seashell while you're marching in a fire with a sword. I mean, I can't make this stuff up. maybe you don't have to do that. To awaken to these places, but it's a good story, and I want to share that story. But I think really where we're all going, and I really believe this, and I really trust that we're going to that place, that reconstituted light. We're seeing it, and each of us, as we see that and we see the oneness, we wake up, and we do kind of wake up really from a very dark dream, and then we start building and creating and doing things. So I really thank you for what you're doing in Fort Worth. I mean, having a congregation of people that get together and have peace and love and harmony as their goals in life, to come out of, church on Sunday or whenever you go, and to bring that consciousness and spread it. And I think that's what's taken over. The light is that whenever there's darkness, it's just the absence of light, and you punch a hole and the light comes through, and I think we've been doing that. So that's what keeps me inspired. What keeps me inspired is really knowing that that we're loved, that
yes.
On a deep level, that we really are.
Yeah, beautiful, beautifully put. And folks, if any of what we discussed has piqued your interest, you can get hold of this book. It's in all the usual outlets. It's called Drowning in the Light, Memories of the New Age. And ends on a bittersweet note because Jared went through some serious health challenges. So I'm sure most people are going to ask, how are you doing now? You doing better?
Oh, I'm doing great. I mean, I was one of the reasons I also wrote this book, and my agent really said, I'm going to publish, we just got to get this out, is because for many years I thought I was just completely healthy, green drinks and all. And then, after a bad divorce, or at least emotionally bad, I started seeing bruises all over my body, and I found out that 90% of my platelets were being destroyed by antibodies. And so I went through years of struggle and things, but a lot of alternative healing and herbs and everything. And really what it came down to it was surgery and a drug. And I'm fantastic. Everything's great. I live a fantastic life. But I know a lot of people that, you know, even though I know it's all hologram, we're all light, you know, dressed in matter and all that, that, you know, that's part of that grand paradox. It's all a dream and it's all very real, and every detail matters. So, yes. It's the book takes people through that journey, and I appreciate, you know, to being able to share that. It's pretty raw,
absolutely.
But it's finite, hopefully, to read.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm taking away from it is, you know, we live in a both-end world, and we integrate the two together in a delightful way, and this book really shows that. It leads you through Jared's life, but I think you're going to find resonances in your own life, and there's a lot of fun in it, a lot of inspiration, so get hold of it. And if people want to get in touch with you, do you have a website, Jared?
I do. It's not for the book, but it's for my business, which, interesting enough, is we build platforms for authors and publish and do media ebooks and all kinds of cool things. And you can contact me there. And actually, if you have projects that you're working on, I'd love to know about them. There's a place, actually, to share that. And that sends it directly to me. The name of the website is Dream Sculpt. That's DreamSculpt, one word. Dream, like go to sleep and dream, sculpt. Like a sculpture, dreamsculpt.com. And when you scroll down to the bottom, this is, you know, tells us about your project. But you can contact me there as well.
All right, excellent. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Jared. Next week, Emily J. Hooks joins me. She's going to talk about her book, The Power of Forgiveness, always a pertinent topic, so join us then. But right now, I want to really thank Jared Rosen for being on the show with me. Wonderful. A time to of sharing together. Thank you.
Oh, thank you as well, and really appreciated our time and the honesty of our conversation.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, and thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you next week. All right. Bye bye now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
If I were brave, I'd walk. Where fools and dreamers dare to tread and never lose faith.
How is life working for you? Would it be okay with you if life got easier, simpler, yet more meaningful and vibrant? Join certified life coach Carla McClellan Tuesday afternoons for Vibrant Living. Each week, Coach Carla and her guests will share strategies and solutions designed to make your life more vibrant. Is there something in your life you'd like help with? A dream you'd like to achieve? A relationship you'd like to improve? Call into the show toll-free for Coaching with Carla. That's Vibrant Living, Life Coaching with Carla. Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Central on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
What if we're all meant to do what we secretly dream?
Many of us have heard someone say, "I've learned my lesson. I'll never do that again." All too rarely do we hear, "That was a wonderful lesson. I'm glad it happened just the way it did, even though I was uncomfortable going through it. I now understand why I experienced the pain. With this new awareness, I can change my behavior so I won't make the same mistake in the future. We bear a good part of the responsibility for creating both the positive and the negative situations we experience in daily life. Wisdom comes from understanding the result of our choices and realizing that we can always choose differently. By fearlessly confronting the role you play and the experiences you may have judged as mistakes in your life, you can make future experiences fruitful and increase your wisdom. This Law of Life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today